Hey guys, just to let you know that this episode contains discussions of sexual violence and domestic abuse. So if this is something that you don't feel like listening to right now, that's perfectly fine. Feel free to tune in to one of our other episodes.
Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
Hi everyone, my name is Leanne Levers. Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast. And this month, as you might know, for Black History Month, each of our hosts are taking an episode for themselves. I believe Shan has done an episode, Livs has done an episode, and now I'm doing an episode that is focusing on a topic of my choice. And for this episode, I want to talk about my experience or my personal experience with sexual violence. I think for me, many people might not know, but my career for the past 10 years has been around working with both victims, survivors, as well as offenders to reform and to change and to heal respectively, but also to engage with legislation that helps to better protect women and better increase our chances of reducing sexual violence or the potential of sexual violence for women across the diaspora. I think one of the things that most people don't know about me is the reason that I entered into this career. So between the ages of 15 and 18 or 15 and 19, I was in an emotionally and sexually abusive relationship. It was my first relationship ever. And as a way of dealing with or processing this experience or my victimization, I dove straight into an academic career, which I think allowed me to understand for myself why I had been through this experience and why this person had done this to me, but without having the courage to explain why I was doing it. So I dove into this career of working with women and working with offenders as a way of trying to reconcile what had happened to me. But in many ways, I think my career became a bit of a scapegoat or a bit of an excuse or kind of like a blanket for me to protect myself from actually having to share my truth. And I think this episode is really important to me because so many of the dope Black women in the group have come to me or have expressed in the WhatsApp group and shared so authentically and so courageously that I think it would be inauthentic for me to not share my truth at this point in time, because so many of the other women have been so courageous in doing exactly what I tell women to do every day, which is to share and to be open and not to be ashamed of what has happened to them and to not hold any sort of blame or accountability for what has happened to them. And so this is my chance to do the same. And in doing so, I wanted to share the space with someone, probably one of the only people that I've told in detail or in any detail about what has happened to me, and that's Nkechi. Nkechi is a dope Black mom and a dope Black woman, and meeting her through Marvin has been a life-changing experience for me. She has taught me what it is to be genuine and be authentic. Sorry, guys.
You're going to make me cry, girl.
And no, but it's true. She has been such a force in my life within such a short period of time. And if she didn't share her own story so authentically with me and just be such an authentic person in general, I don't think I would have had the courage to do this today. So I wanted to create a safe space by bringing her in and having her share and talk about the issues as a way of not just providing me with a blanket, but also just to show how pervasive the issue of sexual and domestic violence is within the Black community. You know, I think the fact that there are so many women in our group, Nkechi included, that have been victim survivors is important to share. And it's representative of the statistics that I'm sure we'll get into about how many Black women experience sexual violence, how many Black women experience violence in general at the hands of Black men and at the hands of men in general. And so, yeah, this is why we're doing this episode today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nkechi.
I'm Parbing. I am a dope black woman and a dope black mom, as Leanne just so eloquently said. I am also what I would call a joyful survivor of domestic abuse. I stand here. I stand here as I am, as the woman that I am now, because of the work that I've done, the therapy that I've been involved in, and also the choices that I've made for myself and the decisions that I've made about how much I'm going to actually allow my trauma to control my future, my parenting, my friendships, my love relationships. I'm not qualified in any way, shape or form, but I'm only qualified in the journey of life. And sometimes that's the biggest one. I'm just very, very honored to be here. My relationship with Leanne, I met her through Marvin, and we just clicked. We kind of clicked. I thought at first, actually, when I first met Leanne, I just thought, wow, this person's got so many walls up. You know, I was just like, this is a really interesting person. But wow, she's got so many walls up. Because I remember when I first met you and you were like, yeah, I'm a doctor. And everything was like super professional and all like defining of your profession, which is amazing. And your achievements have been amazing. But I could just see you. Like, I could just see the love from you and the vulnerability in you. And yeah, I was just like, okay, this is going to be an interesting ride. And I think it actually converted really quickly into like a really genuine sisterhood. We've shared a lot together, and I've spoken a lot about my situation with Leanne, because she is a safe space for me. But I'm also an author, and I'm writing a book. I'm writing a few books, and one of them is around our trauma as black women, and it's a fictional book, but it's going to be, there's lots of different people's lives in there, mine included. And I just think it's a really important topic, because I think it's shrouded in shame. And I think violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, it's all shrouded in secrecy, especially within our community, even now with all the visibility and all the conversations about mental health and your self-esteem and all the things that are actually linked to what could derive off of your trauma, even now, still, there's still a kind of, we just don't really talk about that. And I think that it's a beautiful thing when you're in a group like Dope Black Women, when you see people, as you said, so authentically, just coming forward and just like, yeah, this is me, this is what I've been through, and I want to share that for whatever reason, you know, for therapy for myself, for support, to support another, you know, there's all these different scenarios, but what a beautiful thing that we're able to do that. So I'm just very privileged to be on this call with you and, on the pod. We're doing COVID yeah, podcasting at the moment. But yeah, so here I am.
Yeah, and Ketchy's right. I mean, we did immediately click, but in a very real sense, and it's kind of shifted the podcast, and doing Dope Black Women has shifted my approach. But oftentimes I lead with my profession as a way of deflecting or not necessarily showing the background as to why I entered into this profession and the real vulnerability that exists underneath that and how closely tied they are together. And so when Ketch and I met, she did, I think one of the first things that you asked me actually is if I was a mother. And you said to me, you're going to make such a good mom. And I didn't understand it at the time, but I was moved by the fact that you said that to me, not knowing me that well. And then I remember, when we went to a program called Landmark, which Marvin had invited us to. And at that point in time, I think I started to open up to Ketch even more than I had before. And I started to hear some of her stories and what she had been through. And I was just like, wow, she's saying this so openly and so just not in a blasé sort of way, because you always speak powerfully, but you just said it so without reservation, which is something that I have never been able to do. I mean, this is something, just for context, this is the first time I'm ever speaking about this publicly. So my siblings, I had to tell them before I jumped on this pod because I didn't want them to be surprised, but they didn't know about it. None of my girlfriends in Jamaica know. Even the people that are closely connected to my abuser don't know. And really, yourself and maybe two other people are the only people that I've mentioned it to in passing. So yeah, I definitely think it was important for someone that I connected with in such a deep way to be on the call. And someone who has lived, you know, if not even... I don't remember what the first time was. Do you remember the first time we actually discussed it?
I don't know, because I think... my disability, so I'm partially deaf, and I'm partially deaf because of the domestic abuse that I suffered. So I'm kind of like, they're kind of linked together. So if I've had to explain to somebody that, oh, sometimes I might say, what did you say? Or can you repeat that? Or something like that. Then the next question is, oh, how did that happen? Or... you know, or, oh, because even some people have said, oh, you don't look like you're deaf, or you don't talk like you're deaf, or things like that. It's really, I know, wild. I know, yeah. We're in 2020. And people are like, sometimes I say, well, I wear hearing aids, and they're like, why? And I'm like, because I can't hear without them. So it might have been very early, because I'm very much like I said, I'm at peace with it. I've come to a place of peace with it. So and I am not going to simplify it and make out like, oh my God, yeah, I'm just at peace with it. I'm just so cool. Oh yeah, I sat there and did a couple of meditations. No, it was a serious piece of work, and it was an intentional decision that I made to not let it drive me crazy and not let it take from me. So if you ask, if I'm explaining that I'm partially deaf, then the likelihood is the next question is going to be, oh, were you born like that, for example? And I'll say, no, I was in a domestic violence situation and he cracked all the bones in my ears. So, and I'll talk very much like that because that's where I'm at with it. And it's a process, and a lot of people then say, and interestingly enough, that I was speaking to another DV survivor the other day, and we were both saying to each other, we were relaying our stories, and like there was this real tone of like, yeah, and then this happened, and then this happened, and we're talking about high level, real traumatic things that have happened, and there's this calm. And I actually said to her, you know, don't you think it's strange how people who have suffered trauma tend to speak and relay and convey their stories in this really like controlled manner? Yeah. And then what people then say is, oh, you're so strong.
And yes. And,
you know, like you deliver it like this, and then they're like, you're so strong. And then I was saying to her, don't you think sometimes you think, well, yeah, but it took me a lot of work to get here. And that delivery that you speak of, absolutely, for me, is rooted in peace. But also, I think we have to sit above the trauma, because if you delve into the trauma every time you speak about it, it's so debilitating for your spirit. And actually, even physically, it's tiring to get into all of those. You just won't survive.
It's funny that you said that, because I think for me, I often deliver anything traumatically, and I think Leanne, our producer, can probably speak to this, but whether it's I'm talking about my parents, or whether I'm talking about, you know, kidney donation, and now talking about this, there is this tendency that I have to deliver information in this very like monotone kind of approach. But for me, it's not necessarily rooted in a sense of peace. It's rooted in a means of deflecting and downplaying what I've been through. And I think sometimes I do that, one, because there's so many reasons. You don't want to muck up the mood in the room. Sometimes it's because you don't want to go through, you're afraid that if you the process of going through it will break you, and how do you come back together? So much of my talking about it in a professional way or in a very kind of academic way is really just as a means of saying, if I talk about this shit, if I delve into this shit and really give you guys the nitty gritty rawness of what I've experienced, I won't be able to come back from that. And that's a real fear that I have. So even now, talking about it and trying to be more open about it is difficult because I'm afraid to fall apart. And how does that process of coming back from that look like? And so I guess that's kind of why another reason that I have you on the call is because you have come back from that and you are able to sit above it from a place of peace. And how did you even, what did that look like?
So within the midst of the chaos, I had a beautiful son. And I was like, I need to understand how I got here. I need to understand how I'm going, I just need to understand. Because for me, it was about, he just can't be in this and he can't have a mum who's in this. And, I wouldn't be a good mum. So for me, a lot of my initial reasons for seeking therapy were rooted in my journey in motherhood. And then when I actually got into therapy, I was like, oh, this is not about motherhood at all. This is about you and the way you viewed yourself and the way you felt about yourself and why you felt that way about yourself and all of these things. And I'm gonna be completely transparent. When you say to me, when you say how the fear of delving into that emotion and thinking you won't come back from it, I'll tell you this, I'm walking proof that you do. I'm walking proof that actually it isn't. Sometimes exploring that and really unpacking that is where the real joy can come. Because you have to delve. If you don't go, and I think that people think as well when they step into the therapeutic setting that delving into it is going to look a particular way, and we've created all these stories in our head about what it's going to look like, how it's going to feel. I'm going to cry uncontrollably. I'm going to just be in it, and I'm going to want to lock myself in a dark room, and I'm going to have to. But I think I can only say to you, Leanne, that you've probably come much further than you think you've come. Yeah, you've probably actually done more work than you think you've done. But I think when you start to delve into things, especially into traumatic events, it becomes less about the event and more about how you found yourself in that relationship, in that place, what that meant, unpacking what you felt about you and forgiving yourself for even finding yourself in that position. Because for me, I didn't understand it. I've been raised by one hell of a strong Black woman. Yeah, and my dad's strong as well. But my mum, I was raised as a single, in a single parent household by a strong woman. My mum's a doctor as well. Do you know what I mean? So it was like, how did I?
Exactly.
Get here?
No, it's the same thing. And because for me, I was raised by two very strong parents. As you said, my dad grew up in the 1920s and, you know, experienced like a hell of a lifetime pre-independence. I mean, he grew up in a colonial country, right, under British rule. My mom, the same thing. She was a lawyer. I saw her get up every single day from 4 a.m. to 7 p.m., come home at 7 p.m., cook dinner, do homework, all of those things with three kids. And I think it's when it happened to me, I mean, I know I was young. I was 15, as I said. And by the time I got to 18 and I kept, you know, 3 years into this relationship where I was constantly being at least emotionally abused for a long period of time, I kept saying to myself, but this, I'm me. Like, how did I let this happen to me? And why do I keep going back? Like the same questions that people ask you all the time. And now you're looking at it like, why the fuck are you asking me that? I was asking myself. I was like, how am I still here? Like, I'm sitting in this room with this person and I'm allowing him to do this to me, you know? And so, yeah, I resonate with that in so many ways. And I think so many women resonate with that in so many ways. There's this whole, I don't know if you felt this as well, Ketch, but there's this whole thing about cultural betrayal that Black women often feel when they're abused by a Black man. I think it's called cultural betrayal, where you don't want to out anybody because of the fact that you know that the system is not in a Black man's favor, you know? And for me, when I was ready to come forth, especially in the context of Kingston and Jamaica, after it happened to me and I had a chance to kind of reflect on, do I want to call people out or do I want to let people know? I immediately thought about the fact that he would be villainized as well. And how would that make for his future, knowing that he had also had a past where he grew up in an abusive household where his mom was abused on a daily basis by his dad. His mom his dad kicked his mom out of the house into the street. She was a drug addict. Like, there were so many things that I knew impacted his own behavior towards me that I felt that telling my truth would have been a disservice to him. And it still does feel that way, to be honest. Like, if I think about where I am now, my biggest concern in sharing this part of my life is how it will impact him, if it will impact him. You know, because I do come from a small place where people know each other. And if I say this was my first relationship, they know who that is, you know?
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
Yeah, I think for me, it's nice to see that you're in a place of peace, because that's ultimately where I want to be. I think for me...
Sorry, I just want to interject just quickly about the peace thing. Because I think when people tend to talk about peace, they tend to think that I'm just floating through it all. And I'm like, oh, this is all, I'm just fine with it. It's not that. It's when the challenge comes, or when an emotional feeling towards it comes, I have learned and I know how to manage that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to be really clear about that to anybody that's listening, that I'm not saying that I'm like, oh my God, yeah, these atrocities happened to me and I'm just cool with it. No, but what I have learned to do is operate from a place of peace. When I say peace, I mean when that flashback comes in my face, or you know, a trigger comes, that I manage it in a particular way, because for me, the negative reaction or emotional reaction of distress, discomfort, pain, anger, resentment, you know, all of these things, that doesn't help me cultivate myself. So yeah. I choose to combat those feelings in a peaceful manner. So I just want to be just kind of clear about that.
No, 100%. No, 100%. But I mean, just to comment on that, it's interesting. So I think the space that I'm in is where I avoid the challenge altogether. Like, I have, for the most part, completely blocked it out. And part of blocking it out is not talking about it. And I think for me, the reason that I feel like I'm ready to talk about it now is because I've been through a whole lot more. You know, I've been through a space where my parents have passed. I've been through a space where I've been in other relationships where I've seen how my inability to be vulnerable has impacted the success or the failure of those relationships. And not just the success in terms of if I'd been more vulnerable, it would have been better. But had I not been so vulnerable, I would have been better, because I don't know the balance between finding boundaries and being vulnerable to the right person. And actually, am I falling into the same trap of being vulnerable in a space that feels safe, but what actually feels safe to me is destructive. And so I think that's kind of where I am now. And I guess more to the point of wanting to speak out now is that everybody knows that I've moved back to Jamaica for a period of time, and I feel like being home has allowed me to rediscover myself in a certain way. You know, I always say that when I come home, my shoulders drop, I feel myself, like I feel like my whole self, and I feel empowered to do exactly what you just said, Ketch, which is just to face, I feel like I'm better prepared to face the potential fallout, the potential emotions, just by being in a different space, you know, and kind of returning to the space where this all took place, you know, where my actual experience happened. And I think that I do now believe that there is real joy on the other side of that.
And I think people think again about joy in this like really euphoric, beautiful way. The joy is that you actually went through the challenge and you functioned through the challenge in a particular way. And that's exactly where the joy comes, because there's always going to be challenges. You know, there's always going to be things that are going to come up and represent and all these things. But the joy is like when that comes and then you're like, oh, I actually handled that really well for me, because everybody's management looks different.
Yeah.
You know, so and you were speaking about the victimization of the Black man and about how that factored into your journey. For me, it was about the fact that I just loved him.
Yeah.
And even though he was doing these things to me, I loved him and I wanted the best for him at all times.
Yeah.
And even now. And also the other thing I think that we do is we understand. So you see how you were speaking about his past, his demons, his issues. So we understand, we can feel, because as Black women, we feel, we empathize, we're in there, we're in the trenches with you, we're riding with you. They don't call us ride or dies for nothing.
True.
Yeah. So there's all of that. When we consider leaving, telling the police, you know, telling our brothers, our uncles, whoever, there's all of that. There's a consideration for the whole person and not this one part of the person that actually has a serious fault and a serious glitch. Yeah. But we as Black women have this ability to be able to see the whole person. And also in abusive situations, it tends to be that's not just the fabric of the person. So it's not always that.
Yeah.
There's cycles, you know, there's a whole wheel. When I was in therapy, there was a whole wheel linked towards domestic abuse, right? Yeah. So like something traumatic happens and then there's a fallout and then there's the makeup, and that makeup bit, every single time I had that makeup bit, I just truly believed nothing bad was ever going to happen again.
Yeah.
And then it's like you can see the deterioration. You kind of know it's coming. You know there's chaos coming. Then the chaos happens. You learn to elevate yourself, like almost remove yourself. Like, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, I tended to feel like I was watching it happen to me. Yeah, or I just wasn't me.
Yeah. Even now when I think about it, now, and when I think about actually, because my relationship started out as emotional abuse, you know, he would get angry about things or try to manipulate my movements or where I was going, what I was doing, who I was seeing. And then it slowly built into this situation where I remember there was a specific instance where I had a journal and I had been writing everything in it. And I don't know if he thought that I was writing about him, but he wanted to see it. And I said, no, you know, this is really personal. And he ended up breaking a car door window because he punched it out of anger. And I remember in that moment thinking, I'm not actually in the car, like I'm actually watching this happen. And so every instance that I can think of, whether it's that or whether it's the actual sexual victimization, I experience it as happening to somebody else, as if it didn't actually happen to me. That's the way I talk about it even now, up until this point. And I think for me, it is one of those things that you do genuinely try to experience it outside of yourself, because you try to, I think it's a way of like trying to explain it to yourself or trying to justify it to yourself. I don't know if that's the case for you, if that's how you felt.
I think it was just like survival. I didn't overthink it. I didn't even plan to do it.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, something really bad's happening. Right. Okay. I'm just... like literally I would just like my body's here, this is happening, I'm screaming, I'm shouting, we're arguing, whatever the case may be, but I'm like, my spirit, for want of a better word, is like sitting above and just gone into survival mode. So I need to like make some distance between this and again, maybe that's why, you know, you don't hear about many crimes of passion. You don't hear about women turning around and just stabbing up a man. True. even if he's beating her ass. Do you know what I mean? Or whatever. Or screaming at her or calling her a whore or a bitch or whatever it may be. You know, you don't hear about that. And I think that is the power of you're not just skin and bone. Yeah, no matter what you believe, it's not a religious, there's no religious context here, but you have a spirit and your spirit teaches itself to survive. How am I going to survive this?
I think it's interesting because how long ago were you in that relationship?
15 years ago.
Yeah, I'm probably around the same, a little bit more. And I think what I've noticed is that more women are starting to feels like more women are starting to come forward, and it almost feels like more men are starting to be more, even more combative, instead of saying, oh, actually more women are coming forward, maybe we should start to believe our Black women that are coming forward and saying this. But instead it seems like the vileness of the responses is even more exacerbated than before. And I wonder, just to provide an example, our Minister of Justice in Jamaica a few months ago, you know, was talking about sexual harassment in the sexual harassment bill. And he basically said, you know, if women don't come forward in 12 months, they need to get out of here. You know, because if you don't address this within 12 months, he said, we don't want what happened with the Me Too movement to happen here, where there are women who are coming forward 20 years later within that space. And I just want to, for me, it's so mind boggling because it's like, why don't we just believe women? Like, why would a woman lie about the vile things that we're talking about? And why is it that men are having this even more horrendous response to the fact that more women are coming out?
I mean, the first thing I'm going to say is love to all my dope Black men, because we have so many amazing men within our community. So it's not that. I think it feels, because the ones that are objecting, their voices are loud. Yeah, but there's a lot of our Black men that are not in any way, shape or form in agreeance, aligning with, approve of any of that behavior. So I think we need to give kudos to, and we need to acknowledge that we have a lot of dope black men that are like, this is some BS. Do you want me to go see this guy? You know, there's a lot of them that are like, yeah. In my life, I have a lot of dope black men who are just like, absolutely not. It is not even a consideration for me to put my hand on a woman, force myself on a woman, blah, de, blah, de, blah. But when the negative voices speak, they are very loud.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. So I think because now we are exposed to social media and all of this access, when the loud voices come, it's like a child throwing a tantrum in a room full of good kids.
Yeah.
You've got all these good children, but this one child is throwing the maddest tantrum, and everyone's looking at this child like, wow. Control your picnic out or whatever. Do you know what I'm saying? So I want to, I'm not downplaying the fact that their voices are very loud and I'm going to address that. But I wanted to first just say to any of the men that are listening, we know you're there and we hear you and we appreciate your aligning with us. The other part of it is that I think there's so many different, like, we as black women function in all these different constructs of blackness.
Mm-hmm.
So, and black men expect us, like I said before, to be in the trenches with them. And yeah. So even no matter what, there's an expectation that we're just supposed to ride with you. So why are you speaking? It's almost like, forget that this person is an abuser. Yeah, you're just speaking out against us.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to do that because you're supposed to be in the trenches riding on, you know, there's this kind of, and I feel like that voice is really, really loud. And this kind of like, well, she must have done something. You must have done something. You must have done something for him to bust your teeth out your mouth or sexually assault you or, you know, do whatever. What did you do? This is an interesting, I just find it wild. Like, you're like,
yeah,
you just don't believe that somebody could just have a little, because I do believe that abusers have got something wrong with them. Like, you cannot, something's going on in psychologically for you to be an abuser, right? So something's not right and you're just a nasty narcissist. A power freak, whatever it may be, it's all about control. And I think, just to say that I think sometimes a lot of our abusers, they are try to be controlling of everything because they didn't have control somewhere else.
Yeah.
But that does not excuse that, because my thing is, your responsibility as an adult is to take care of your trauma.
Yeah.
Before you do anything else, your responsibility as an adult is to take care of your trauma, men and women, because you cannot function effectively through life without dealing with your trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything you come into, as we know, we carry everything with us, and women as well. Because if I had dealt with some of my traumas, I probably wouldn't have ended up in the relationship that I ended up in.
Yeah.
Because I would have healed that part of me, and then there wouldn't have been a neediness or a vulnerability or a desire for something that is written in fairy tales or, you know, all of these things. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, that is exactly true. And so I think that it's really empowering for me to see a space like Dope Black Women when women are coming forward, particularly when you think about the number of women who are, you know, the stats is that like 1 in 2 women or 1 in 4 women, have experienced some sort of sexual violence in their lifetime, but also that Black women are disproportionately at a greater risk of sexual violence. They're at a greater risk of dying at the hands of their perpetrator. They're at the greater risk of psychological abuse in terms of insults, in terms of getting called out, in terms of that kind of coercive control that you talk about. And I think it's really important for us to show like that there are overlapping kind of characteristics of abuse. So even if someone, for a long time, I minimized what I went through because my sexual victimization happened for a very short period of time. But when I started to look at the overall relationship, I saw the buildup of the emotional abuse taking place. I saw the coercive control. I saw the name calling. I saw the nobody will believe you if you tell them what's happened. And I think sometimes we have a tendency, as you said, to minimize what we've been through. And that's why women don't come and report. I mean, for every Black woman that has been raped, at least 15 Black women don't report their victimization, whether it's because they want to protect somebody or whether it's because they've been told that nobody will believe them. And I think that's really why this conversation is so important, particularly for Black men to hear, because it is so important when we are faced with the justice system not believing us and not being able to gain any sort of validation through the justice system, that at least we have our community to support us, you know?
Just to touch on what you were saying about sexual victimization, and I think there's this blurry line about it being within a relationship as well. Mm-hmm. When sexual victimization or any form of abuse occurs within a relationship, there is this very like gray area that I think women struggle with and are like, hold on, did that just happen? Was I just forced to do that? Or, but because I'm his woman and he's my man and this is something that happens between us, so did that really just, was that really, I think that a lot of women carry question marks over their actual experiences of sexual, especially sexual victimization, because it's easier to define between somebody boxing you, hitting you, even calling you a name, a slur, do you know what I mean? And this fine kind of line to navigate between assault and what we do, and you know, and the fact that I've consented to you thousands of times, but this time, I'm not speaking for myself, but when I speak to other women, I hear that, like, I didn't even realize it was that.
No, 100%. I mean, my victimization was actually the first time I ever had sex. And so the justification for that victimization or that assault was that I had made him wait too long, because we had been dating since I was 15. We're now 18 going on 19, and I've had him waiting for 3 years. What do you expect me to do? Like, a man is a man and he's frustrated. So that literally resonates with me so much in terms of, so for me being 18, I was like, well, yeah, like I did make him wait a really long time. You know, and then it became a situation of, well, did you actually wait? Were you really a virgin? And so it was constant. Then it became an issue of controlling where I was going and what I was doing. Like, it was either, well, did you wait this long? Have you been sleeping with other people before me? How could you have waited this long? Or now that you are having sex, you're going to go and have sex with everybody else because you may. So it just became, there was no right or wrong behavior. And you do feel quite helpless. You feel like, God, no matter what the fuck I do, I'm wrong. And where do I, you know, how do I fix this? And so you're constantly just trying to fix a situation that is unfixable. And you get into this really, you know, dismal spiral of trying to save something that is not your fault.
Doesn't make you happy and doesn't do all the things that we were sold on a can that relationships are supposed to do.
Yeah. It's those like heteronormative ideas.
You know, we in this household, we purposefully kind of try to not feed our daughter with a lot of princess stories. Mm. And that's me. That's my decision. Because, I mean, thank goodness Disney's kind of moved forward now. We've got like Moanas and Mulans, and we've got these kind of magical kind of creatures. Characters. But that princess story is sold to us from so young. And the princesses never said no. Yeah. They were never like, oh no, I don't want you. Like, you came to save me, thanks a lot, but I'll see you later.
You're right.
You know, we never had that. And that generation never experienced that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that I think also there is that shift taking place where, as you said, we see the Moanas now. We see, what's the one with the red hair?
Brave, right.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember what her name is, but she was just not having it. She was just like, no,
yeah, even the reimagination of stories like Aladdin and stories about Lion King, where the women are starting to be more independent and starting to be more resilient. And I think one of the greatest things that we can do, and partially is one of the reasons that I'm trying to tell this story today, is because, you know, seeing empowered women creates empowered women, I think. And, you know, hopefully the idea is that with this story, with us sharing and just talking so openly, in conjunction with all of the other shifts that we see, will slowly engender some sort of change for more women to speak up and more women to want to help other women, not just by sharing, but by doing other things within the community and participating in spaces like Dope Black Women as well.
Absolutely. And having explicit conversations with the younger generation about what a beautiful relationship really looks like, mm-hmm. what it really is. You know, I want my daughter to understand that it's a beautiful thing to love somebody, but what loving somebody means is not to not love you.
Yeah.
The only way that you can love somebody is actually with abandon and with true unconditionally love somebody is when you love you.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that you have to be like super iron fist as well. I think that's what happened as well for us. I think feminism came about like really, really, really big and harsh. So it was like, I'm an independent woman. I don't need anybody. I don't need a man. I don't need da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And there was like this drilling down of conventionalism and being just in a family and wanting that and desiring that. So we went like to the other end.
Yeah.
And within that, again, our silence came a bit because everybody was promoting being super duper strong. And that's why you didn't open your mouth. And that's why I didn't open my mouth and say anything, because actually all these images then started to flood us about being strong and being independent and knowing what you want and not taking no shit from anybody and all of this kind of stuff. And then you're in this situation, I'm in this situation, thousands of us are in situations where we're like, well, I'm not doing that because this is happening to me behind closed doors. But when I'm out there, I can't be seen as, you know, weak.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, like, I mean, that's the mad psychology of it, because of course you're not weak.
Of course.
You know, actually, you are strong for even being able to survive, cope, function, still have a career, still have a family, still have all these things and be suffering trauma. So yeah. Whoever's listening, if you're in that situation right now, you are not weak. Yeah? You are not weak. I'm getting emotional now. You are not weak for being in a situation that you didn't choose to be in, for having been coerced into a situation, for not seeing the red flags. You're not weak.
Yeah.
Yeah. You must know that. You're not helpless either. So think strategically about how you can survive, how you can get yourself out of the situation. Don't put yourself in danger either. Be smart. But know that you're not weak and you're not helpless. Because for a long time, I just thought, look at you. I just look at myself and be like, look at you. What are you doing? You know, what are you doing? But in terms of me coming out of that situation.
Yeah, how did you leave? Because for me, I'm not gonna lie, I was lucky. Like, I left to go to university and I had the physical distance. And so by the time I got back, I was in a position to protect myself by not entering his space. And fortunately, this is only by the grace of God within the space of Kingston. I've never seen him since.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Literally never.
I left in stages. So I left about 5 times.
which is for the record, sorry, Ketch, which is for the record, statistically, it takes women 5 to 7 times before they will leave permanently. That is
I left
very
about
normal.
5 times. I had my friends, my family involved in helping me leave. And truly, I just literally woke up one day and was just like, this can't happen again. Yeah. I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. So it wasn't a definitive moment for me, because even after I had left the house, there was still residual stuff.
Yeah.
There was still residual moments, you know, there was still there was still a need for this person. And this is the thing, I think that when people think about fleeing or leaving, they don't understand that it's not linear. It's not just like, this person's done all these things to me, and therefore, if it was that black and white, we would leave after the first time.
Yeah.
You know? So because you actually had a whole life with this person, you know that the whole of them is not wicked, is not evil, is not, you know what I mean? So there's, it happened in stages. As I said, I was just like, I have to, like, this can't go on. I can't be this person. And it, you know what, as well, my major breakthrough moments of leaving were actually all kind of verbal things.
Mm.
So I felt supremely free when I was able to say to my abuser, if you swear at me one more time, I'm going to put the phone down.
Mm.
Sounds wild. Sounds crazy. Or if you come to my house, I'm going to call the police. Or, it was just like, it was all these small, I physically left, but the emotional leaving and the not getting back into the cycle of like, oh, this is amazing, oh, this is traumatic, oh, this is amazing, oh, this, do you know what I mean? It was that, it was those things that when I saw, like, the relationship at that time when it wasn't even romantic, just turning.
Mm.
And then an event occurred that created distance as well.
Okay.
And so I was... But even within that, there was still, like, emotional control. And then I was very, like, no, just no. But I went through... I was in therapy as well. So my leaving, I literally left 5 times.
It's so interesting because I think I wonder if that doing that and being part of that, you know, process where you left gradually is something that, because I never had that. As I said, I was in the thick of it. I left for university, still in a relationship, and broke up with him, while being apart, whilst I was still at university. And so I never had those moments of embracing my power to say no, or saying, actually, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I think maybe for me is that maybe that's why it filtered into my relationships moving forward, is because I never actually had the moment where I was like, actually, this is no more. you know? And because I just kind of shelved it and put it to one side and said, well, I'm going to deal with this by embracing this career, and this is how I'm going to fix me, is by trying to fix men who do this to other people, you know? I was like, I know why he did this to me. I saw it. You know, as you said, you see this whole person and you see it. In one minute he's screaming and shouting at you, but in the next minute he's being screaming and he's being screamed and shouted at by his dad or his mom or his siblings. And so, yeah, I, instead of trying to fix me, I was like, I'm gonna fix me by trying to make sure this never happens again to anybody else, and I'm going to fix the men, which is why I work with more offenders than I do victims. I'm gonna fix the men that are doing this to other people.
Can I just ask, in that fixing, were you not triggered?
There were moments.
Yeah, because I just find that quite so, I mean, we're just incredible, you know, we really are. To have the ability to, there are, to have the ability to fix offenders and then you be able to kind of remove yourself from that, you know, and I just wonder, like, how
I
wonder if you were healing yourself. This is what I'm saying about your journey and about you thinking that you're in one place, but actually in doing what you did, it was a part of you healing yourself.
I think there
you're saying you shelved it, but you didn't shelve it because it was an intentional decision to enter into a profession that was going to make things better for other people. But I think in that, I'm just suggesting, in that, I'm having a bit of a light bulb moment. And I'm like, in that, maybe you were actually doing a piece of work of for yourself. There's no way you couldn't have been doing a piece of work for yourself, because you're one person, you know. There's not four Leanne's, you know. There's one Leanne. One maybe, like, so let's say university intellectual Dr. Leanne is like, I don't know, 70% at that time, right, of you doing this work. But there's still all these the other factions of you that your work must seep down into. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah, 100%.
And I think that maybe you've actually, I just suggest to you that maybe you've got to this point on this pod, talking about it outwardly, openly, and sharing that with the world because you did that work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a different picture for every person, you know? And I want the women who are listening to this and the men to just... Healing is not linear. It's not like necessarily not everybody goes and sits on a couch and talks to a therapist and works through it all. And major parts of my healing did not occur on a couch with a therapist.
I've never actually discussed this with my therapist, to be honest. That's the crazy part about it. And we discuss many things, but I don't know that my therapist knows about this. Which is crazy. No, and I'm just thinking about that. No, it's not even something that I've consciously or unconsciously done, you know? And I don't know if it's because there's this whole thing about compound depression and compound trauma that people go through when they have another situation that happens that's a big life trauma, like my parents passing within 11 months of each other, that I just compounded that on top. And so me being abused or assaulted went straight to the bottom, and it became not a priority for me to deal with anymore. But actually, you're right. Maybe in going through this process of working with other people, whether successfully or unsuccessfully, because not every abuser that I've worked with has been reformed or has changed their behavior, is part of my process. And maybe you're right, maybe that's what it looks like. Because there were times that I was triggered, for sure, and I found coping mechanisms of finding safe spaces and finding like physical safe spaces, you know, like, so my living alone, that's why living alone is so important to me, because I need that safe space in my life at all times. And knowing that investing, but then in some ways it's also prevented me from investing in safe spaces that I find in other people. Or when I find those safe spaces in other people, it scares me because I'm like, ooh, this feels too safe. And so part of my work also, if I'm being honest, in terms of working with offenders, was because I was so comfortable in the dysfunction of that space. You know, hearing those stories and empathizing with my offender became empathizing with the offenders that I met, and trying to fix them was part of my empathy, you know? So I think it was both. You know, there is a part of me that, as you said, maybe there was like trickling down of healing, but the intention was not necessary. I didn't start out with that intention of saying, yeah.
No, definitely not. But I think we can't overlook that you are a whole person.
Mm.
And so everything is linked. There's no like, yes, of course we all can compartmentalize, absolutely, but it's still the same shelf. You've got you could have 10 boxes on the shelf, but it's still the one shelf holding the 10 boxes, you know, and they're still touching each other because they're tightly packed. They're still rubbing shoulders. You know what I'm saying? So it's just something that came to me as you were talking.
No, you're so right.
And I think it's an ongoing process as well. Getting out is an ongoing process. Getting out is a physical move, and then it's a mental move, and it's like a constant move.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, for example, I met my husband. You know, and I had to talk to myself about loads of different things. This is just a good man. Just real simple. He's just a good man. But I was like, for years, no, not having a joint bank account with you, for example. This sounds so stupid. But literally, like, because I just needed to have control. Like, it's okay. And he'd be like, I'll be there with a little £10 in my bank account. And I'm fine. I wouldn't ask you. And he'd be like,
yep. I don't know how to ask for things. It's so
yeah.
True.
He'd be like, so why haven't you got your nails done? I'd be like, oh, yeah, because I've only got £10. I get money next week. And he'd be like, huh? You know? So it kind of seeped in other ways.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it's a constant journey. And it is, you know, your trauma just doesn't disappear. It's woven into the fabric of you. It's how you're going to use that, yeah, as you move forward. You know, how am I going to let this kind of permeate my spirit? What's it going to do? Is it going to destabilize me? Is it going to anchor me? Is it going to help me manifest into the greatest version of myself? What am I gonna do? And I think we as victims, and that's why I say I'm a joyful survivor. That's why I say that, because it's like the trauma happened to me. It was real. It's manifested in a disability. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
But what am I gonna do? How am I gonna make it? How am I going to make it make me fabulous? Because I'm fabulous. You're fabulous, Leanne. We're all fabulous. But there's a whole community of amazing, fabulous women. Yeah? No matter what circumstance you're in right now, you are the light. There is no one, there is nothing like us. And even if the place is so dark right now, if you really tune into your spirit, there's a light there. Hold on to that light and be like, okay, I've got this little bit of light and I'm going to work with that little bit of light. And it may take a bit of a while, because my family wanted me out. They were like, get out. My family were just like, what are you doing? Get out. We will come. And they came and extracted me from the situation. And I went and put myself back in the situation.
Yeah.
So as allies, as family members, as friends, you know, I've had friends that have spoken to me years later. I'm so sorry I didn't help you in that situation, but I just didn't know what to do.
You couldn't have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Forgive yourself for just allow yourself to forgive yourself. Sorry.
Yeah, I think, and that speaks to a really good point that you just made, Ketch. I think one of the things that you can do as someone who is, I mean, had I let people know what was happening, I think the thing that I would have just wanted is for them to hold me and not to try to convince me to do something. Because especially people like us, or, you know, women that are strong, and Black women are generally so strong, we are quite headstrong as well. And I think sometimes telling the person what to do is exactly the way to get them to do the opposite sometimes. And I think if you're in that situation, and you know, we've been in that situation so many times where we have friends who know, I mean, 1 in 4 Black women, that means every third friend of yours is probably or has gone through this thing, right? And if they come to you and they share with you, just hold them. Don't tell them what to do. Don't try to fix them. Just let them be their sounding board. Be someone that they know that if shit hits the fan, they can come to you and they can trust you. Because once that trust is broken, they have nobody else to go to.
I also appreciate it from the other side of the fence, as a friend, as a family member, how absolutely painful and devastating and scary it is to know that somebody that you love is being treated in this fashion.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes people do not react how you need them to react because it's so painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I kind of understood that quite early. And I have one of my best friends, and, you know, we have conversations, and she's just like, I just didn't know what to do, so I just didn't do anything. And I just stopped calling, and I stopped because I just didn't do anything. And she will be like, I need you to forgive me for that, bloody blah. And I'm just like, that's what you had to do at that time. And I understand for you that it was very difficult because I was quite explicit. I was just like, I know this is happening and I know this is shit, but I just haven't got the strength to leave. I just can't. I just can't do it. And I think as the victim, we have to understand that if people then start to step away a little bit, it's because they can't manage. Yeah. And if people, you know what I mean? But I totally agree, because I also had people that were very close to me. My sister, another one of my friends who were there through the trenches for it all, biting their lips, holding their hands, the police would come. I'd be like, no, nothing happened. They're like, what the hell? But they still were there with me. Like you said, when the shit hit the fan, they were the ones packing the car and, you know, running for the keys and all this kind of stuff. Just meet the person where they're at. Meet the person where they're at. Hear them. And be real as well and say, this is really painful for me to hear and I really feel helpless. And then you as the victim can say, but you just being here right now, just listening to me is enough.
Yeah.
Because what you don't want to happen is for people to, I mean, part of abuse is being isolated. And so you don't want to further isolate that person either. And it is hard. It is hard to be a bystander to those things. And I think that's another reason why it's just so important for us to speak on these topics, because people don't know what they can do. People don't know how they can help. And I think being the change that we want to see is just about speaking authentically and continuing to be brave enough and continuing to speak out when the Minister of Justice says, actually, women should only have 12 months to disclose their victimization, or answering those questions saying, why did you leave? I'm going to tell you why I didn't leave. This is why I didn't leave. And we've talked about on the podcast why both of us didn't leave at the time. And, you know, there is that just speaking your truth and the power of that. And I've learned so much that, yes, while my professional work has made a difference on some level, the power that is coming out of that, or the power, there's so much more power that can come out of that by letting people know that I was there too, or this is something that I've experienced and this is where I'm at with it, and showing where you are at with it, and people finding different bits of or different gems within our stories that they connect to and that they feel empowered by, and just embracing that. I mean, and I think we try to do that at Dope Black Women as on Dope Black Women as well. There are so many women that come out with their stories and share with us so authentically, whether to me personally or to another woman in the group or just in the WhatsApp group that we have. And it is always so impactful. It's always one of those moments, because I think there's a danger in people feeling that they don't want, no one wants to hear what they have to say. And it's just like, oh, it's just another black woman coming out with this story. And, oh, you know, why would we need to believe her? Or, you know, there are so many barriers. And I think the change that I would like to see is just for women to have the space across the board, not just in Dope Black Women, but just have the space to speak.
I think the conversation, I would love to see some really honest, and I think we do that on the sharing call, but just some really honest exchanges between the black men and black women about the vulnerabilities, about what happens if you do lose control, how to manage that, you know, and also just for men to hear our stories. And also, I know this is Dope Black Women podcast, but we must acknowledge also that there are men who also have are in domestic abusive relationships as well. It's, you know, and are subjected to those things, to horrific things as well. So I just wanted to acknowledge those survivors as well, because that's another thing that's shrouded in shame. But it would be, I think, the most beautiful thing that we can try and cultivate between us as a community is to be able to have those open, honest conversations without judgment and without the blame game and without feeling attacked for whatever perspective you have, you know, because I think that will then cultivate healing within the community and that will ricochet out.
100%. Gosh, Ketch, thank you so much. I don't think I could have done this without you.
You've done a great job, babe. A great job. And I just wanted to close on just to anybody that's listening that's a victim. I need you to understand that it was a process for you to find yourself in this position, and it will be a process to get yourself out. Mm. It's just like anything else. You don't get a degree overnight, and then you don't get a job overnight. You yeah. don't make a baby and have sex and conceive and then give birth to the baby the next day, and then you don't, when you give birth, you don't get your body back the next week. It's a process. It yeah. takes time. And allow yourself, forgive yourself. If you're still in a state of disbelief, forgive yourself, allow yourself that time. Because, but just be in, have intent, have a goal.
Yeah.
Don't set a time on it, unless, of course, you're in immediate danger, you need to get out. But just set a time. When I'm more talking about out of, when once you're out of the actual immediate danger, allow yourself that time to process.
Yeah, I think one of the things that my therapist has taught me, even though we haven't been talking about it within the context of domestic violence or sexual abuse, is be kind to yourself always. Forgive yourself. Love on yourself every single chance you get. Leanne, I'm sure you've heard me say this a gazillion times. Like, every time I do something great or every time something shitty happens, which I feel responsible for, I literally engage in some sort of self-care. And that's something that Jeline, one of our other Dope Black Women, has taught me as well, is literally just take time. Like, it's, the situation is fucked up. And if you think it's fucked up, it's probably 10 times more fucked up than you actually think it is because you're still in it. And the process of being kind to yourself is the most amazing thing that you can do to start the healing process, is just giving yourself time, whether you're in an abusive relationship or whether you've just been in a shitty relationship or whether something bad has happened at work. Like, it actually doesn't matter. I think it's so important with the world that we live in as black women to just love ourselves as much as we can.
Amen.
Sorry. Thanks, Ketch. I appreciate you. I love you so much.
And I love you. I'm so proud of you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That was deep. We went there, baby.
So thanks so much for listening, guys. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them from. On Twitter and Facebook, we are Dope Black Woman. And on Instagram, we're Dope Black Woman 1. We'll be back with you next week with our regular scheduled programming. All of the women will be back. And until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.